Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about The Bourne Supremacy. 2004, Paul Greengrass. We know him from The Bourne Ultimatum, Jason Bourne, Captain Phillips, and United 93. None of the movies we've ever talked about on the pod yet.
Didn't he also do The Green Zone? The Green something? Another Matt Damon movie?
Captain Phillips and United 93?
Yes.
Oh, so two very uplifting movies.
Well.
Okay.
I think United 93 is what put him on the map, right?
Maybe. He just has one of those names that sounds familiar, like a Dickensian name. Or maybe not.
I don't know. I got nothing.
My silence is tacit agreement.
I would normally save this sort of thing for podcasting. I would normally save this thing for housekeeping, but I'm going to tangent right from the beginning because I had a stunning revelation. I have a birthday coming up on Sunday. Thank you guys for your presence. You remember the Traveling Wilburys?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you remember how they seemed impossibly old?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the meme showing what their real ages were at the time in 1988 when they were the Traveling Wilburys?
No.
Let me just point out.
Wasn't Tom Petty like in his early 40s?
Tom Petty was 37. Yeah. But you know what? Bob Dylan was 47. And I think Jeff Lynne was 41. George Harrison was 45, I think, and Roy Orbison, the only one older than I am now, was 52, and he died.
Yeah. I would say that most definitely the three of us have so far, thus far, to our agedness, aged better.
All of us could be in the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, but
we might be too old.
You know,
Bob Dylan has been 70 since I was a little kid.
That's true. That's also true.
Well, and you know, the thing, I think, what is it? Wilford Brimley was younger than I am. And I think about the same age as Jason when he was in Cocoon.
The diabetes. You
know, in the old folks home.
Yeah.
Paul Greengrass did United 93 after Bourne Supremacy.
Well, that would. Yeah, all right. I'm surprised it took them that long to make it.
Brother Jay and Brother Drew, recapping our, if I remember correctly, from The Bourne Identity, you guys love that movie, and yes. I was a little tepid. Mm-hmm. And you guys couldn't wait to tell me to talk to me about Bourne Supremacy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go. And I was very deliberate that
I turns out Jason could wait longer than I could wait. But.
Yeah, we had a little snafu where I changed the calendar and put BS all of us, and Jason thought that meant we were just going to have a rambling discussion. Which seems
which
fair.
I love your willingness, Jason, to just be like, "All right, cool. We're just going to talk about nothing."
Well,
that's I mean, this is fun.
It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, I don't know.
Was it? We're going to find out in 2 weeks when we put it out. Yeah.
I was going to say. By the time you
listen to this, it'll already have been out.
I thought, well, you know, it's, we don't script anything anyway, so why not? You know, why not have just a gab session and you know, get an episode out? And it never occurred to me that it was a movie, because we've never not had a movie title when we weren't doing a movie, and because it wasn't spelled out, nobody taking creative license yet, and my little strange brain just didn't conceive of it being a movie. So,
well, now I know to be more precise.
Hilarious.
Anyway,
yes, we have to get back to Bourne Identity 2, The Rise of Nikki Parsons.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God. Yeah, you had me strung along a little bit there. So,
no, not really.
Who's going to take the lead on Bourne Supremacy? I mean, I'll do the I mean, whose list would this be on? Who thinks this is a great movie?
I think this is a great movie.
I also think this is a great movie.
Okay.
Do you think this is a mediocre movie just like the last one?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
But we'll talk about it. It's been a couple of weeks since I've seen it.
Let me tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah, I know you will. So, I guess we will start alphabetically with Drew. Drew, how did you discover this movie? This particular.
I discovered this movie when it came out in the theaters. I was tracking it. I was excited about it. I had seen The Bourne Identity on video and had changed my mind about it from when I saw it in the theater. And I was really interested to see what they would do with the Jason Bourne story in the movies, since there's no way that it could follow the books. So having the same title as the second Bourne book is pretty hilarious, because the first one had barely any connection to the book, and the second one has no connection to the book. But yeah, I went to go see this in the theater when it came out, and I was blown away. Turns out Carl Urban is pretty good. Joan Allen is great.
Yes, yes.
And they changed directors, so the style of the Bourne Supremacy is actually quite different than the Bourne Identity. It's a lot more shaky cam, a lot less stylized, but more kinetic, it feels like.
And I can talk about that because I watched an hour and a half of special features, extra stuff.
Oh, sweet. But they did something interesting in the very beginning of this movie by killing Marie, is they took away the person that Jason Bourne has to talk to. So they let Matt Damon do a lot more just kind of silent acting, which I think fits the character a lot better. And the action scenes in this movie are awesome. They're really fun. There was one particular fight with an improvised weapon, which was a rolled-up magazine.
That's awesome.
Which was great. He destroyed another car or two. Another Hallmark.
Yes.
He reckoned with some of the past that he started to remember. And what I really love, what is just really... it's mind-blowing about rewatching this series and watching the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum back-to-back, is you get to realize and appreciate how, like, the first two-thirds of the Bourne Ultimatum takes place within this movie, which is crazy. I can't think of another movie that's done that.
So we're going to jump back in time for the next movie?
Yeah, there are, like, the final two scenes in this movie... Jason Bourne limping away in Russia, and then Jason Bourne talking to Pam Landy through his scope. Like, the first hour of the Bourne Ultimatum takes place between those two scenes.
I'm going to argue later that this movie should have ended earlier, but we'll get there when we get there.
Sure.
So, Jason, how did you find this movie?
I believe that I watched this. I want to say... I watched this with the parents, but I'm not sure. Trying to think.
It's definitely a mom and dad kind of movie.
Yeah. One second. I was remiss in my duties here.
You said duty.
Yeah, I don't know. It was 2004, but it was summer. So I must have, this must have been out, like on video for winter when I came home for Christmas or something. Cause I can't imagine a summer movie but I'm pretty sure I've watched this with the parents along with the first one. And so it wasn't a theater experience. It was a home experience. But no, I remembered enjoying it enough that when I've seen it rerun, like on TV, whenever I catch it, I would invariably end up watching it, which I think is true of any of the movies except for the weird, well, I shouldn't say that. The first three movies, I tend to, anytime I see them, I will just stop and watch them, so.
The fourth movie is the most rewatchable.
That's the Jeremy Renner?
Yes.
We will get there.
Okay.
But not tonight.
I haven't seen it yet, so.
Yeah, I intentionally did not watch The Bourne Ultimatum after this. Even though I was curious, I decided just to take these one at a time. Because there is a progression, I think. But let's just dive in, shall we?
Yes.
2 years after the events of The Bourne Identity, Jason Bourne, Matt Damon, and his girlfriend Marie, Franca Potente, are living on the beach in Goa, India. Bourne is beginning to recover some of his memories, and he is troubled by disjointed flashbacks of an assassination he carried out in a Berlin hotel. Meanwhile, in Berlin, a CIA officer working for Deputy Director Pamela Landy, Joan Allen, who we know and love from Manhunter, Nixon, and Face Off, is arranging to pay $3 million in exchange for the Nesky files, documents pertaining to the theft of $20 million from the CIA 7 years earlier. During the exchange, a Russian assassin named Kirill, Carl Urban, who we know from Dread, intercedes. He plants two explosives in the basement electrical circuit, one in the main and one in the subline, blah, blah, blah. He tags one of the items with a fingerprint belonging to Jason Bourne. The explosive on the main line kills the power, where Kirill kills both the agent and the person with the files. He then steals both the files and the money and gives them to a Russian oil magnate, Yuri Gretov, played by Carol Roden. Kirill then travels to Goa, his next task being to kill Bourne. So the idea is he framed Bourne for this theft, and then he's going to go kill Bourne so that it's all tied up in a nice bow. Unfortunately, Bourne sees him first, and through some careful spycraft, I guess, gets away. Sort of. Because as they are making their final getaway, and I'm yada-yadding a pretty good action scene through the city, or the town, or whatever it is, but Marie is driving, and Kirill takes a sniper rifle and kills her. She loses the car, control of the car, it goes into the off a bridge into a river, and Bourne has to escape after he finds that Marie, the love of his life, is dead. It is very tragic. I don't mean to yada yada that it's not good. But
you know. No, it's a very pretty scene. It's also later stolen part of it into Casino Royale.
I was going to say, I've seen this sort of thing before.
No, after.
No.
Casino Royale's after this.
No, it was Skyfall. The beginning of Skyfall, right? Sort of backwards, right? Because doesn't he get shot and end up on the beach and the scorpion? Am I thinking of the wrong movie?
I meant Casino Royale where Vesper drowns.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's that.
They have that underwater sequence.
Well,
that,
then
just... That desperate, can't get her free kind of trauma.
Yes.
And the flowing water and the... So... that's what I was alluding to.
We call that a full Shelley Winters. So,
is that a Poseidon Adventure reference?
It is, yes.
Okay.
I don't know if she dies in Poseidon Adventure. I think she does.
She, wow. Yes. She has a heart attack.
Trying to go underwater at
after one point. Rescuing, I think, the kids. I haven't seen that in a long time.
At least she didn't go like Natalie Wood.
Yeah, that would be insensitive.
Well, that's why she didn't shower on the boat, because she was going to, you know, she washed up on shore. Ba-dum-bum.
So Bourne gets away, and then he returns to his cottage and burns all of his passports and her stuff. He collects all of her stuff and destroys it. He takes one picture, and he leaves India. He goes to Italy to learn why he's being targeted again.
He heads to Naples.
Yes. Meanwhile, Landy's team is investigating the killings in Berlin, and they find the fingerprint that Kirill planted. And they find out that it's Jason Bourne, part of the top-secret Treadstone project. So Landy flies to CIA headquarters in Langley and finds more information, and she asks for the proper security clearance to even view this file. He approves it, and she learns that the fingerprint belongs to Jason Bourne, and the other names on the list include CIA Chief Ward Abbott, Brian Cox, who, of course, we love from everything, including being maybe the second best Hannibal Lecter. Yeah, maybe third best. I mean, he
does that make Anthony Hopkins the third best?
Yeah, I guess maybe he's third best, but
he's certainly better than Red Dragon. He wins the Red Dragon Wars with Anthony Hopkins.
Definitely, yes. Yeah, Silence of the Lambs is hard to beat.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they were in Manhunter together, right?
Yeah.
Brian Cox and Joan Allen.
Yep.
Nice. She gets some revenge here.
A little bit. So when Landy talks to Abbott, Abbott denies knowing anything. And then when he finds out that Landy knows all about it, he tells her that as far as he knows, Jason Bourne was long dead. And he becomes very concerned when she tells him about the fingerprint found in Germany. So based on what was found on a hard drive of a computer, blah, 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 Landy tells the people she's working with that Bourne and Conklin may have been involved. Oh, sorry. It's the deceased Russian, I think. May have been involved in some lucrative venture together. And Bourne appeared to be still involved in whatever it was. So that's why he's resurfaced. And when Landy is briefing her superior and other staff, an agent comes in and says Bourne's passport has shown up in Naples. Landy tells Abbott that the stolen files contained information about the CIA agent who was suspected of having stolen $20 million from the CIA, and there's a Russian politician, Vladimir Nesky, who was prepared to identify the thief, but before he could do so, he was killed by his wife in a Berlin hotel in a murder-suicide. Based on the fingerprint, Landy believes Bourne killed the CIA officer and the source in Berlin, so Abbott and Landy set out to capture him. So it's cat and mouse.
Blah, blah, Bourne shows up using his own passport.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Also,
this
is
badass.
Is he?
Well, he's setting a trap.
I guess.
Because Nikki later makes the point, like, he doesn't make mistakes. If he's doing anything, he's doing it on purpose. If he's used his passport as real one, he's doing it to get attention.
So he's just sitting there in the Carabinieri office, and a CIA interrogator comes in, Tim Griffin, comes in to talk to him, but he doesn't know this is Jason Bourne he's talking to.
Well, he doesn't know who Jason Bourne is. He knows it's Jason Bourne he's talking to, but he doesn't know the importance of what that means and what that means for him and the whole interrogation and perhaps...
Yeah, he is an awesome level of smug when he's trying to interrogate him.
Yes. He gets a call saying, oh, this is a top priority. And there's a little bit of gunplay where Bourne escapes the interview room. And he copies Nevin's...
A little bit of gunplay. The agent draws his gun and Bourne knocks him out.
Yes.
Not unlike the first movie.
True.
Yeah.
In Berlin. Or not Berlin, Switzerland, wherever he was.
Switzerland, but with German cops.
Right. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, we're here now.
So, Bourne copies Nevin's SIM card so that now he can spy on the CIA phone somehow.
Yes, magic spycraft.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And he finds out that he is suspected in the killings in Berlin. So... As Landy is planning on getting on a plane to Europe, Abbott warns her that she's about to get into more she can deal with. Cronin, their boss, orders Abbott to go with her and put a stop to Bourne's activities. So Bourne steals a car and heads to Munich, where they have Swiss police officers. As he drives, he's having more flashbacks.
I think they would be Bavarian cops in Munich, just saying.
There you go. So, in Amsterdam, Abbott finds... What? In Amsterdam, Abbott finds Nikki Parsons, our hero, played by Julia Stiles.
The most important character in the Bourne quintilogy.
Yes, in the Bourne universe, she stands supreme. She was specifically tasked, of course, to monitor the agents assigned to Treadstone.
Is she in the Jeremy Renner movie?
No spoilers.
Yeah, you'll have to find out for yourself.
Oh, damn. Damn you.
So, all right. Landy forces Nikki to go to Italy with Abbott and Landy. And they consider her critical to attempt to capture Bourne, because Bourne wants to come in and talk to somebody he trusts.
Does Abbott appear to be super misogynistic and or patronizing to Landy?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, because he's an old white guy.
Yeah.
So, in Berlin, a CIA office has a video of Bourne at the airport. One of the agents figures Bourne has made a big mistake by being so careless, but Nikki tells him that Treadstone agents don't make mistakes. That if he's able to be tracked, it's because he wants to be tracked. So,
dun, dun, dun.
So Bourne finds and interrogates the only other Treadstone agent remaining, Gerda, who tells him that the project was shut down after Conklin's death. Conklin, of course, was the head guy who was killed in the first movie. Gerda most likely had been forewarned about Bourne, and they end up having a huge fight. And Bourne ends up strangling him to death.
That was a great fight.
That's our magazine fight?
Yeah, rolled up magazine. Makes an awesome weapon. Yeah. And then he uses the magazine in the toaster.
Yes, yes.
That's genius. A note from the extras. They actually blew up a house. It was a real house.
Sweet.
And all of that is real effects. None of it is CGI. So there was a pretty interesting documentary about how they have these slingshot harnesses to pull the guys back to make them appear like they're, you know, being propelled from the explosion. And in the days of old, in the early days of technology, they would just basically pull them straight back. But they've determined that if they just put the arc of the arm up higher, and then they wrap the cord like diagonally around the person, it will actually spin them around and back. So they're not pulled straight back as much as they're kind of up and spun around. So that's how you get that kind of acrobatic dancing. So,
is it less stress on the stunt person, or does it just look cooler?
I think it just looks cooler. I think being backwards propelled by force when there's stuff in the air coming at your face, I think it's probably equally stressful no matter what angle. So that's pretty impressive. I mean, it was impressive to watch because they were talking about how they they had to make sure that things exploded at the same time, and they had to make sure the door exploded correctly and the windows exploded correctly, and that they had to make sure they had the house rigged properly. And, and since they really ostensibly only had one take, they really had to do it correctly.
Yeah, I was going to say, they need to have lots of cameras because you don't have time to pick up coverage later on that.
But it was pretty interesting. So it was deliberately this tiny little neighborhood with this nondescript little street that just looked like any other little village. So
did they damage other houses in the explosion?
No.
Oh, excellent. So Bourne uses his spy craft to find where Pamela Landy is registered. So he follows her and he ends up...
Well, his spy craft was just calling hotels, right?
Well, yeah, still. Anyway, he goes up to the top of a building and sets up a rifle with a scope on it, and he lines her in his sights and then calls her cell phone and starts interrogating her, because he thinks that she is running Treadstone now. Because remember, he doesn't know anything about Treadstone still. I mean, he knew that it was whatever he was involved in, but he doesn't have any memory of anything. So Landy tells him that, no, Treadstone's been shut down, and you know it. And, hey, you remember killing two people in Berlin? So Bourne tells Landy he wants to come in, but then sees Nikki, our hero, and says, oh, I want to meet up with her, and she can bring me in. And when Landy says, what if she can't find that girl? Bourne says, she's standing right next to you.
Dun, dun, dun.
So everybody freaks out. So Abbott and Nikki want snipers positioned to kill Bourne when he meets with Nikki. But Landy wants him alive so they can learn what he knows about the Nesky case. But after Abbott has a private conversation with her, she decides to go ahead and position the snipers. So Nikki is given Landy's phone, blah, blah, blah. Then Bourne ends up grabbing her and getting on a streetcar. And they elude the tail. He takes her down the subway and ends up interrogating her kind of along the way.
He's really mean to her.
Yeah,
he is. He is.
I was not okay with it. That's not cool, Jason Bourne.
I mean, she's just everybody's punching bag from the beginning.
She is the second most important character in the entire movie series.
Okay, we'll see, won't we?
Well, maybe third if we're counting Jeremy Renner.
So he is, he's interrogating her hard.
He's issuing a rough interrogation, I think is what you meant to say.
Oh, yeah.
Either way works.
Yeah. He asked her to tell him when he was about in Berlin, and she's like, no, you were never in Berlin. And he thinks she's lying, and he's all upset. He nearly shoots her, but ends up leaving her and taking off again.
Did you get the feeling from this movie that they had a history together?
I'm hoping. There's got to be a reason why she's in these movies. Now, I understand you said before that in the books there's some sort of connection, relationship, or something. Or she's a fleshed out character? No, not at all?
No.
Was she invented for this movie? Movies,
yes.
Rather? Ah, okay.
Yeah. That's why she's so important.
So, Nikki was wired, as it turns out. So, Landy heard the conversations and believes that Bourne maybe can't remember killing the two men in Berlin, and maybe he didn't actually do it. But Abbott becomes increasingly agitated that Bourne can't be killed or caught. By the way, I did think, Abbott being increasingly agitated and visibly sort of spiraling out of control seems like a certain high-level politician in the U.S. government.
I can't imagine who you're talking about, Mango Moose.
Dunleavy?
Oh my god, no, Dunleavy is a different character entirely.
Oh, has your governor gone full bozo?
Our governor has gone full Trump.
No, that's not surprising.
Did you see the whole thing about the, well, never mind, I'm gonna, yeah. That is at best for housekeeping and probably just best not to be talked about local politics because, you know, they say local jokes get you local work. Hi, Mom. So.
It is, I will say this. It is astounding that we are already pining for the stability of the Walker administration.
I am pining for those carefree days of the Palin administration.
She was great.
She was great when you compare her to, anyway.
Who would have thought we would have longed for W back?
Oh my god. Yeah.
And I don't say that with ease, by the way. That's painful for me to even say.
Yeah. So, okay. So Bourne goes to a library and finds articles about the Nesky murders, which occurred in the Brecker Hotel in Berlin. So he decides to go there because he doesn't have a lot of leads, right? So he needs to kind of go where the story takes him.
He doesn't really remember much, so anything he pieces together, he really kind of tracks down because he wants to pin it down and either figure out what happened or find something else that will lead him to something that will help him figure out what happened.
Yeah, and I know I'm yada-yadding a bunch of stuff, and I know that I'm suggesting that I had a tepid response to the movie, but the actual plot and action moves pretty fast. I mean, there's not a lot of like lulls in this movie. It's a perfectly entertaining movie.
Yeah.
Well, the plot is mostly nonsense.
Oh, well, a little bit, yeah. But we're going to get to a little twist here. If you don't like spoilers, skip 45 minutes. So Abbott's young associate, Danny Zorn, takes Abbott down to the electrical breaker room in the Berlin building where the killings occurred and shows him how the explosive charges that were set were done in a way that was unnecessary. So he thinks that Bourne wouldn't have done that. In fact, it was probably set up to frame him. And Abbott asks him to show how the explosives were set up again. And then, while Zorn is turning around and looking at the electrical connections, Abbott stabs him to death.
Yeah, poor Danny.
I know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Danny gets shivved in the basement. Just the most painful place to get shivved.
Yeah.
And we find out that Abbott is a bad guy.
Yeah, Jim Phelps style.
Exactly.
We haven't done Mission Impossible, have we?
Wait, Abbott's always been a bad guy, though, right?
Yeah, but he's been a bureaucratic bad guy. Remember when I said that in the first movie that I thought that that both these guys were actually doing their job? They were just kind of snaky? Yeah, it turns out he's a full-on murderer now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you suggested that, oh no, they were murderers all along. And I was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's tussled a little bit.
There are only murderers in this room, Jason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Danny gets it right up the... And then, Bourne arrives at the Brecker Hotel and goes to the room of the murder, and that's where he starts to have his memories. This is where it's getting, you know, a little bit hokey, but that's okay, because it moves along. And the police show up, and we have some fun scenes. Bourne does a lot of outside of the building work in this movie. Actually, the last movie, too. It's not so much parkour as just, like, free climbing of buildings.
Yes. Ledge work, car destruction, improvised weapons.
Yeah.
All Bourne hallmarks.
Ledge work. I love that. Did you make up that?
Yes. TM.
Okay. Ledge work. That could be a whole video game. Maybe a mini game within the Bourne video game.
Could be alleged.
Maybe just an iOS app.
There you go. So, yeah. So he eventually jumps off a bridge onto a barge. And there's grappling hook action.
He injures his leg.
Yes, he does. So in the meantime, Abbott is shocked to learn that Bourne let Nikki go unharmed. And he's very concerned about where Danny might be. And thinks maybe Bourne may have come into the hotel. And Landy recognizes the room Bourne was in as being the Neske murder room, and she no longer believes that Bourne killed the Neskes. She then receives word that Danny Zorn's body was found. Presumably killed by Bourne, right?
Wait, she doesn't believe that Bourne killed the Neskes, or she doesn't believe that Bourne killed the people at the other hotel at the beginning of the movie?
Well, I don't know. Good question. You're right. I think maybe this is a bad piece of synopsis writing here that I stole from IMDb. Either way, she's starting to have her doubts about the hard line Abbott has on Bourne. Something is not making sense. So Abbott calls Gretkov and tells him that his CIA associates are onto the facts about Neske. And he emphasizes that Gretkov must kill Bourne or their involvement in the theft would be revealed. Gretkov tells Abbott that he isn't obligated to do anything and hangs up on him. And then Bourne appears behind Abbott. Abbott admits everything to Bourne.
I hate this kind of like trope where the good guy gets the bad guy to just admit everything and then has like a hidden recorder on them.
Yes.
I think that's really cliched. However, Brian Cox is so good that even though you know it's exactly what Bourne's doing and it's silly, Brian Cox is so compelling in this scene that he makes it a really good scene and a really entertaining scene to watch.
I agree. Brian Cox makes every movie better.
Mm-hmm. Even when he's given like the most cliched garbage to spew, he's great.
I would say that neither of you have seen Long Island Expressway.
I have not. Yes, yeah. That's not a good movie. It has Brian Cox in it.
It's a good movie, but he plays a serial child molester of young boys.
But is it an effective performance? I'm not saying that you want to root for him.
I mean, I don't think he was a method actor, if that's what you're asking me, but...
The real question is, can he dance and sing? Because then you can do whatever you want with little boys, barely.
I don't get the reference, I'm sorry. Oh, well, I see. A waiter, joke for one.
No, I went to training a couple weeks ago where I talked about how it was train the trainer. So I was saying how we've all worked with each other. We've all trained among each other. Some of us trained each other. And so our recruits who are befuddled by the simplest things, you know, we just kind of zoom ahead on because we can finish each other's sentences and sandwiches. And that stopped the room. Because I just kind of went on from there. Apparently, we don't have a lot of Frozen fans that I work with. Because they started mumbling to themselves about sandwiches. What is he talking about? I'm like, joke for one. Move it along.
Yeah, I don't get it. So
it's a song in Frozen. Maybe the only good part of Frozen. I don't like that movie.
Uh-oh. You don't like it?
No, I have a lot of problems with the movie Frozen.
Oh, did your daughter like it?
I got to let it go. She thought it was fine, yeah.
Drew, I'm guessing your daughters loved it.
Oh, yes, very much. Okay. We've seen it probably 432 times.
It's not quite Superman 2.
What were you saying, Eric?
Oh, we're gonna hard move on from Jason's joke. No, I think I'm speaking for Drew, of course, which is a hallmark of me. That I think Drew and I differ.
There's no sock puppet.
I think Drew and I differ on whether or not Elsa is a hero or a villain, whether she is a straight up monster or she is a sympathetic character. Straight up monster.
We likely do differ.
She's a straight up monster.
The monster in that movie is her father.
Yes.
He's
yes.
Like the worst dad ever.
True. But yeah, still. She does some inexcusable stuff and I think likely kills a ton of people off camera. And destroys the economy of a small fishing town. Anyway. So,
look, those off-camera people had it coming.
I'm telling you. Maybe they didn't pay their taxes, right? It's good to be the king.
Oh, wow. We've gone way off the rails.
Yes, let's get back to Nikki Parsons.
Okay. So, blah, blah, blah. Bourne is taping Abbott, spilling all the stuff. And then, before Bourne leaves the room, he sets a pistol down on the desk next to Abbott. What was the movie we just watched where the guy says, well, you should have left me with the pistol? Maybe there's a movie I just watched. Never mind.
I don't know.
Yeah, I got nothing. Sorry.
So Landy walks in on Abbott and finds him holding the pistol pointed at her. And Abbott tells her that he did work for the CIA as a result of his patriotism. And when she asked him about Danny, Abbott called that collateral damage. Ooh, that stings. And when she asks about what they do now, he turns the pistol on himself and shoots. So Landy listens to the audio recording that Bourne got. And she continues to work to try to track him down. But he's headed for Moscow, where Gretkov is in the process of tracking down Kirill to let him know that Jason Bourne is still alive. Because that's another piece of unfinished business. Kirill got paid or whatever for killing Bourne, right?
Yes.
This is the part of the movie that I thought was a little much. Because Bourne takes a taxi to the address. I can't say taxi. Bourne takes a taxi to the address of Vladimir Nevsky's daughter.
A taxi, ladies and gentlemen, is what a Lyft or Uber is now.
Yes, like a more organized, like a communist Uber. So
appropriately enough.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Bourne finds out that she's moved, but at this point the police spot him. So we have another, basically like a taxi chase.
Yeah. It turns out Kirill is, like a part of the secret police.
Yes.
The FSB.
What do you guys think of Carl Urban?
Carl Urban's fine.
Is he Australian?
That's Keith Urban.
He's either Australian or British.
Wait, are they related? Is it like Brad and Steven Dorff?
Carl Urban is from New Zealand.
New Zealand.
And right. Keith Urban is from...
the armpit of the South? I don't know.
No, he's from New Zealand or Australia, I think, right?
Is he? I got nothing.
Keith Urban is also from New Zealand.
Are they related?
No.
Okay.
No. I think just everybody from New Zealand is named Urban.
Ah, okay. Jason Bourne steals a cab, and Kirill commandeers a vehicle, and now there's a chase. That's a pretty good chase. And then we have this whole
chase.
Tunnel thing. And, you know, Bourne, it does a good job with Bourne being injured. It turns out Bourne is quite injured in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, after this big, long chase and car crash, Bourne gets out of his car, and he's ready to shoot Kirill, but Kirill is going to die anyway, so he just lets him go. Well, lets him die.
Well, we hope Kirill's going to die.
Yeah, well. Oh, no, is this part two? Is he in the next movie?
You mean part three?
Well, we don't know, because it's a time shift.
Oh. Maybe.
So, Grekov is arrested by Russian police because Landy drops a dime on him from Bourne's evidence. And then this is the part of the movie that I thought was ridiculous and unnecessary. Because Bourne breaks in on Irina Neska to basically hold her at gunpoint and tell her that what she thought happened to her parents didn't happen to her parents. But it's not like he gives her a rosier picture of it, right? I mean, he has found out that it was not a murder-suicide. Instead, her mother did not kill her father, then kill herself. Instead, he killed them both.
Yeah, it was a murder-murder.
Yeah. And by the way, I did it. So I'm going to leave you this information, and I'm going to go away, thinking I did a good deed so you can now have fond memories of your mother. But now he has created another jihadist. See, that's the problem with these things.
I think the attempt purportedly is to give her some better feeling about her parents and that her mother wasn't crazy and killed her father, that her parents were a victim of the situation.
Couldn't he have sent her a carefully worded letter?
I don't think they make a Hallmark card for that.
Well, did he have to show up?
Sorry, I killed your folks.
Look, I draw the line at actual assassination. That's fine. But character assassination? That's beyond the pale.
Exactly. And there, ultimately, this is a hugely selfish act on Bourne's part because it's unclear she gets any relief from this information. Like, she is not in her life is not any better because of this. This weird bloody man showing up and telling a story.
But also, he's not doing it for her. He's doing it for himself. He believes that he's absolving himself somehow or engaging his past in the hopes that it will revive something.
Well, we're going to get another piece of stunning news that doesn't help anybody. Because back in New York City, Bourne contacts Landy to ask why the CIA was still looking for him. And she thanks him for supplying the tape. And she needs to settle up matters, wants him to come in. He's like, no, not going to happen. But she also tells him that his name is David Webb and he was born in Missouri. Again, his name and the fact that he was born in Missouri, well, first of all, could only be a disappointment. And doesn't seem to have any material help to him. It just confuses his life further. I guess she was trying to do a better thing, but...
Cue Moby.
Yeah, I was going to say, here comes Moby. I think if you watch several credit card ads from magazines in the late 90s and early 2000s, you'll see David Webb is the name on many credit cards.
Oh, yeah? That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, speaking of Moby, we're again the Traveling Wilburys. If they made a current
whoa.
If we made a current
wait.
I'm gonna tell you.
Wait. No, how did you get?
It's a straight line.
It is a straight line.
Okay, I'm eager for you to explain just how this lines up.
Okay, the Traveling Wilburys we discussed being younger. From our perspective now than they seemed from our perspective of our youth. And if you took a current list of popular singers of that same age, you would come up with a couple Gallaghers, a guy from Supergrass, and Moby. You know, speaking strictly on the UK charts, but still. Anyway, so... I mean, I guess all in all, because I saw the movie like almost a month ago now, and this was kind of a rambling synopsis, I apologize. I mean, the movie is fine, but it's not any better than fine to me. I mean, I guess I don't understand why the love. So, Jason, you said you were going to tell me how I'm wrong.
So, this movie starts with his love, Marie, who is his moral center, his moral compass. She's kind of keeping him right. As she's trying to keep him right in the car where they're arguing, we're like, that might not be the guy. He might not be, you know, you're paranoid. Also, you don't need a gun. Like, put the gun away. You don't need to do this. You're not a killer. And so the rest of this movie after she's killed is him trying to find his way. And you get to see the progression of him as he struggles with, is he a killer or is he just somebody who happened to have killed and he's not that person anymore? You see him struggle through that and try to decide back and forth what he's going to do while he's also trying to reveal more about his past and not liking necessarily his past, but realizing he can't do anything about his past. All he can do is what's in the future. So you see all of that in the movie. You see all of that portrayed. You see that in the acting and the action. So that's why I think it's a great movie.
Drew? Anything to add on that? Why it's a great movie? Ledgework. I copy that.
Matt Damon is one of our most underrated movie stars. He's great in everything he does. He has a shit ton of charisma. He's fun to watch. He really embodied this character. They let him do more in this movie. Like you said, this movie cooks. It moves right along. So it doesn't leave you too much time to think about all the utter nonsense that the plot is.
Which is definitely in its favor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it doesn't seem like a big, long movie. How long is it? I mean, it's a pretty...
I think 2 hours, five, maybe.
Yeah. So it's kind of a long movie, but it doesn't feel like it.
There were a number of deleted scenes.
Do tell.
There's a scene towards the beginning of the movie where it actually shows him going to a shack and pulling out all kinds of the documents of Marie and going through them and burning them. I understand why that one got cut. Then there's a scene where he's in Naples and he buys a car from these Italian guys. He just gives him a big wad of cash and trades the car. So I see why that got cut. Then one of the later scenes in the movie, Abbott and Gretkoff meet in Berlin and they have an interaction. And basically Abbott says, well, I needed to get Zorn from the electrical room because I killed him. So that's how supposedly he was going to get rid of Zorn, Danny Zorn. When Jason Bourne is driving from Naples to Berlin and he falls asleep in the parking lot and he gets startled awake by his dream, one of the deleted scenes is him writing in his book journal. You see him writing all that, his notes and going through his notes and pictures that basically his life book, if you will.
Yeah, he's got a dream diary that he tries to connect his life from, right? Piece it together.
Yeah. And then the scene where Abbott and Landy are in the hotel right before Abbott goes up to his room where Jason confronts him. There's a long scene that's deleted where Landy basically confronts Abbott and says it wasn't a suicide murder. Abbott plays pretty aloof about it. And then she tells him, "We found Danny in the basement." And she accuses Abbott of having something to do with it. And then Abbott, shaken, goes up to his room, which is where he eventually is caught by Bourne. And then there's an entire alternate ending.
Oh, that's what I'm really interested in. What's the alternate ending? Does the granddaughter or whatever slap Bourne and tell him to get the hell out of her apartment?
No. When he's walking out of the hotel and he's walking in that big park of snow at the end, right before the credits mm-hmm. come up,
yes.
He collapses into the snow. He actually doesn't collapse as much as he just lays down, as in he's like defeated in death. And then it picks up with him in a hospital room. And Landy is there in the hospital, and she tells him who he is there. And then she tells him, "We know something went wrong with you. We want to find out what that was, and we want to help you get better." And then she leaves the hospital room, and then suddenly there's alarm bells in the hospital, and he escapes his bed and runs off. So that was the alternate ending.
Eh, I like the regular ending. I was hoping Nikki would be more prominent in the alternate ending.
She's still stuck in the subway somewhere. I guess the director wanted a more documentary style that fit the story of the previous movie, but had a different style so that it could differentiate itself. He wanted to make sure that also Jason Bourne was like emotionally truthful. That was his goal.
Well, thank you for locking down the cameras. That was nice. The shaky cam got old
in the first movie. His whole goal was to have it as if you were with Jason Bourne at all times. Like the camera was always with him. So you were as close to him as possible. They really went to the locations. So they were really in Moscow. They were really in Berlin. They really wanted to make sure that the scenery was true and real. They experienced some of the coldest cold they'd ever experienced in Russia, in Moscow, to the point where sometimes they couldn't work because the camera equipment was freezing in the tracks.
Oh, nice.
So they're like, "Oh, that's not cool." And then he wanted a car chase that was very different in feel. He wanted to put the feeling that you were actually in the car with Bourne. So the whole rigging, which is amazing, the rigging of the car was that there was a cage on top of the car that Matt Damon was driving. And on top of that where that cage was, that's where all the driving was done. And Matt Damon was doing none of that in the car. He was just plain acting and having fun. And so Matt Damon remarked that at one point, he's just making it all up. And he goes,
car chase was awesome. I thought it was amazing.
The first couple times that they had him going through it, he couldn't stop laughing, he said, because it was just so ridiculous. And he thought he was having so much fun. But the rig that they made, you'll have to seek it out. It's probably on YouTube somewhere. But this giant rig they made that drives around was capable of some pretty high speeds and able to corner and do what you saw. So, and they destroyed all kinds of cars, and they were filming in Russia, but he made the point that, you know, we would drive cars out into traffic and destroy them in giant, you know, 12 and 16 lane Moscow highways. And the people of Russia just drove past it like it was nothing, because I guess that's, you know, not uncommon in the Soviet Union at that time. Although if you watch any of those Russian car crash videos,
it's not that uncommon now. You could probably do a good job by just driving through Russia and just trying to collect all those car camera videos of you driving through.
Yeah. So So anyway, so it was pretty amazing to see that rigging. So, and then there was a little interview with Robert Ludlum talking about the original screenplay that he was putting together, but the first screenplay that he adapted was 493 pages, and then he realized that he probably was not suited to making screenplays, so he gave it to someone else to create the screenplay. So
yeah, doesn't a screenplay usually translate to like one page per minute?
I don't know.
But so 493 would not be a good number.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brother Jay?
Yes. This is an A movie. It's full of action. It's full of drama. It's got that emotional pull, but it's also got plenty of empty calorie, fun, crunchy stuff that doesn't leave you wanting. So I think this is, I mean, this movie, even though it is decently long, it never seems dull, and it never seems to drag, and it goes right through. I watched it in a single sitting, and I enjoyed it, even knowing the story. Had it been a while since I'd seen it, it was familiar in the universe that I enjoyed. So I think it's a great movie.
Drew, was it worth it?
So worth it. I want to talk about The Bourne Ultimatum and The Bourne Legacy right now.
Well, we're going to have to put you off again for a little bit, but it's coming.
Yeah, now this movie is a joy. I like it better than The Bourne Identity. Probably not as good as The Bourne Ultimatum or The Bourne Legacy, but it's a really good movie. It moves along. It's great. You don't have to pay that much attention to it to enjoy it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Carl Urban's great. Matt Damon's great. Joan Allen's fantastic. I'm going to miss Brian Cox. That one dude who got killed with the magazine, he was pretty awesome too. Yeah, I really enjoyed watching this movie again.
Yeah, cool. Well, you know, that's the thing. I enjoyed it. I didn't see what the big old fuss was, but I can't wait till next one. So that's good. I mean, that's a positive thing. So, yeah, we'll recommend it. So are we on to housekeeping?
Housekeeping. I don't think I have any housekeeping this week, other than to say that boyfriend Jesse and I have our tickets for Alaska now. So
excellent. Can't wait. Hey, I've got a whole new setup to record at the old folks' home. You don't need to bring anything.
Oh, good, because packing my mic sucks.
Yeah, no, so Leave the mic at home. I've got it all set up.
Oh, cool. Well, congratulations, question mark.
No, it's going to be fun.
So, yeah, we'll be arriving late June, and we'll be there for almost 3 weeks. So we'll be there for three solid weekends.
I actually have some time off during that, so that'll be cool.
So we'll have to figure out Dad's birthday and or retirement-ish party. So
yeah. Yeah, that's likely to be a big deal.
I don't know. They might not even be there. They might be ending up in Seattle for the Rolling Stones concert. So.
Which would be hilarious. And it would be the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah. No, I told Mom, like, no, you go. Like, don't worry about it. Like, it wouldn't be the first time I've been in Anchorage in your house. So,
yeah,
you know, I would be fine. Just go. We'll even take you to the airport and pick you up.
Yep.
We'll even take you to the airport if you don't want to go.
Exactly.
You're going to the airport. We'll
stuff you in a footlocker and put you on the plane.
That's right. Drew, any housekeeping?
I've been revisiting a lot of movies lately. The Star Wars trailer hit for episode 9 coming out. And that inspired me to go back and watch the last Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi. It's still really good. I love that movie. It's probably the most unique of all the Star Wars movies. So that's fun. I've also been watching some of the Marvel movies because the Avengers movie is coming out here in the next couple weeks.
Now, this Avengers thing, Endgame mm-hmm. or whatever, what's it called?
Yes.
Okay. Is it going to be the end of something? I mean, is this coming to an end, or is the Marvel Universe going to continue with this? I mean, obviously Marvel movies are going to continue, but
All indications are that it is certainly going to be the end of many of the characters' stories.
So, like, Iron Man is probably headed out.
Iron Man, Captain America, maybe even Thor.
But there's going to be plenty of Hawkeye left.
Hawkeye's looking rough.
Yeah, well. Interesting. Yeah, see, I haven't seen the last couple Avenger movies either. Or Avengers movies.
Infinity War was surprisingly good. They did something really interesting with that movie. It's not really an Avengers movie.
Can I see it without seeing all the movies in between?
Probably.
Like, I haven't seen anything past maybe Winter Soldier. Like, I haven't seen Thor Ragnarok. I haven't seen, what else is in there? That's it. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Yeah.
Have you seen the first Guardians of the Galaxy?
Not all the way through, no. But I love you guys talking about it, so it's perfect.
It's worth it. Thor Ragnarok, you don't have to watch it for Infinity War.
I hear it's fun, though.
Yeah, it's great.
So, got to watch Infinity War and then Endgame.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do I have to watch Black Panther before any of this?
No.
Okay.
But it's awesome.
I've heard. I just never been inspired. It's like the first, Star Wars 7 and 8. No interest. Rebel 1 or whatever it's called. Rebel. Rogue One. There you go.
Rogue One.
Yeah. No interest. Nah, maybe someday. I really had a bad time trying to watch A New Hope with Journey.
That movie is slow.
It is slow, and it's kind of scary up front.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's kind of scary all the way through. Even the funny yeah. parts are scary. So, yeah, it's a little rough.
It's scary up front. It's slow. And then old Ben dies.
Yeah, exactly. Well... Is that your housekeeping? I don't want to...
Oh, no. What I was going to mention was I watched Iron Man 3, which I hadn't seen since it came out on video a long time ago.
Is that the one with Don Cheadle?
He's in a lot of them.
Oh, okay. Is he the Nicky Parsons of the Iron Man movies?
He is. Iron Man 3 was written and directed by Shane Black.
So it happens on around Christmas.
It does.
Excellent. There's helicopters.
I really enjoyed it. It was a much better movie than I remembered. I don't think Shane Black knows what to do with superhero stuff. So a lot of the movie is him figuring out reasons why Tony Stark can't be in his suit. But it's really funny. It's set at Christmas. There's a lot of this is also like a Shane Black thing, right? Where he pairs up two people together. And he does that in a couple different ways throughout that movie. And it's both funny and super dark. Because the main character, Tony Stark, is essentially dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Huh.
And I was shocked about how good that movie was, because it was kind of blah in my memory. And if I do the forensics on it after I watched it, I probably had a problem with the ending, because the ending featured a lot of Gwyneth Paltrow. But as it turns out, it's fine. That part's fine.
It's all fine. It's good. Turns out, as an actress, she's fine. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
She's no Melanie Griffith.
I think Iron Man 3 is worth putting like nice. In the list of worthwhile Shane Black movies.
Okay. Well, we can still... there are still some Shane Black movies we haven't seen, right?
Like the latest Predator movie.
Was that a Shane Black movie?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. You know what? Have you seen it yet?
No. Does it take place at Christmas?
I don't remember. I did not. I wasn't looking for that. It very well could, though. And it is... It makes sense now. Now I understand why it's the way it is. I thought it was perfectly enjoyable. It's not what I was expecting after seeing like the Adrian Brody Predators or whatever. It was way different and actually kind of fun. I liked it.
That could almost be my description of Iron Man 3.
Okay, cool. So I've been on a little journey. After the funeral a couple weeks ago, I treated myself to, post-funeral stuff. Like, I bought the 8-pack of Friday the 13th movies on Blu-ray because they were a decent price. And here's a couple admissions that I didn't expect to. This is, I'm on a quest of self-discovery. You know how I said that I don't really justify Blu-ray because it's, I watch it on a small screen, so it doesn't really matter, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out remastered old movies on Blu-ray are pretty stunning, even on a small screen. I mean, talking about Friday the 13th, all of these movies were basically low-budget movies.
Yeah.
So they look brilliant, which, by the way, in a horror movie is not necessarily going to do it any favors.
Right.
Because
you're going to see all the low tech. Yeah.
But you're not a horror fan, Jason, but let me give you a quick walkthrough through Friday the 13th. Spoilers, everybody.
I've seen the first one. I've seen the first one because I was tortured with it by you and Drew.
Yeah, well, okay, so we watched a lot of 1, 2, and 3 as kids growing up, because 3 came out the VHS world, yeah. And so 3 was easy to rent, and 1 and 2 was just, natural progression, because we want to be completists. Now,
what I watched was the Friday the 13th, the TV series.
Which I remember as being kind of awful.
It was TV, so it was kind of like...
Kind of a Warehouse 13 of its time?
It was kind of like an X-Files meets Charmed kind of thing. That's not a probably apt description, but it was kind of like an X-Files-y, Twilight Zone-y kind of maybe Fringe.
Was it like an anthology where they told like a story of the week, like Monster of the Week, like X-Files?
Kind of like that. The premise, I believe, if I remember correctly, which could be pulling it completely out of my ass, but I believe that the premise was that they own an antique shop.
Yes.
And they sold certain antiques by mistake that were cursed, and it would cause things to happen. So a lot of what they were doing was trying to go back and reclaim that and or repair damage done by this thing. So I think that's what a lot of the show revolved around.
Do you have fond memories of it?
Well, I do, but I think I was also pretty young at the time. So my sophistication and or retention may not be either good or of reliability. So
turns out sometimes nostalgia pulls you through.
I do have fond memories of that, but I do not have fond memories of you two rewatching recursively the Friday the 13th movie. So,
yeah, well, let me just give you the quick rundown. Actually, Friday the 13th 1, pretty interesting. Kevin Bacon, good special effects. Friday the 13th 2, more of the same because it takes place around the same time. Nearly like 5 years later, but it's all the same kind of people. It follows the same formula. It's fine. The third movie, 3D, we watched it a lot as kids, not in 3D. It has a lot of hokey stuff where they use 3D because it's a 3D movie from the beginning. In fact, the Blu-ray I have has the 3D thing. So if I wanted to get the blue and red glasses, I could watch the movie in 3D, the comfort of my home, if I want to, the old school 3D. Friday the 13th Part 4 has Corey Feldman in it as a kid. I mean, I guess his character was sort of interesting, but Jason Voorhees as a character, as like the bad guy, there's no acting behind the mask. Like, you look at V for Vendetta, and V is a fully fleshed out character. Yeah, there's no acting behind Jason for 4. 5 is hot garbage. It doesn't even... Jason isn't even the killer, spoiler.
That's kind of funny.
It's just horrible. But it's not the worst. Six is actually pretty good. It's got Alice Cooper songs in it. It was, it's having fun with the Jason character. I think it's got the influence of, you know, Freddy Krueger, Crackenwise. It's that, that kind of era. So now they're having fun with gore and also having fun with humor. Probably less boobs, but that's okay. Part seven is another piece of crap, where they introduce a, some sort of psychic teen. It's bullshit. It's dumb. Some better actors, but it's just dumb. Eight, Jason Takes Manhattan is the worst. It is truly hot garbage. It is like, ugh. It's just horrible. It's like soap opera acting. It's bad. It's got 35-year-olds playing college or high school graduates. Graduating on a whatever. It's bullshit.
So it's like softcore porn.
It's not even, it doesn't have any of the elements of softcore porn that would be fun. And it doesn't, it also doesn't have like if you're looking for gore and kills and stuff, it doesn't have those either. It's just dumb.
So it's just a, it was just a shameful money grab.
I think maybe it has to do with keeping the rights to it. Maybe the rights to the name.
Oh, that could be, or maybe they had a contract.
Something, but oh, it is just the worst. So I'm going to watch nine next, and I've got, of course, because there's 12 of them. So I'll finish all of them. But oh my god, it's I'd realize that comparatively, the Freddy movies are much better. Now I don't think the Halloween movies are much better. I think they have a really steep drop off too. But I'll go through those on my own. So anyway, I probably better let you go too. But I'm happy to hear about your dates. That makes that's going to make summer fun.
Yay.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a creepy way. Hey, Joe. Hey.